And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Welcome to The Audible, presented by Trader Joe's. I'm Stuart Mandel, joined as always by Bruce Feldman on week one of the college football season. There's a different energy, a different glow as we get ready for some college football action. We got a little bit of a taste of it over the weekend with week zero. And Bruce, I hope you had a better weekend than Scott Frost.
Stu, we got a big taste of it. I thought it was a very fun Saturday. Obviously not a fun Saturday if you're a Nebraska fan, Stu. How shocked, if at all, were you that Brett Bielema's Illinois team, the home team, ended up beating Nebraska?
I mean, I did pick Nebraska, but it's hard to be shocked at this point when you watch Nebraska and they just do the same thing. I mean, Scott Frost himself said it's the same movie. As soon as they started playing, it was clear this is going to be no different than previous Nebraska Scott Frost teams. We had our customary Adrian Martinez fumble. We had our customary
snap over his shoulder or whatever.
Yeah, we had the punt returner who tried to throw a forward pass and got a safety.
Well, it was also the punt returner basically fielding the punt into the end zone, basically. Like, it's the biggest no-no. Like,
yep.
Don't back up to the goal line.
It was more of the same. And the fact is that once Brandon Peters, the Illinois quarterback, got hurt, and Art Satowski came in, the guy who, you know, Rutgers transfer, who had just an absolute nightmare freshman season there and eventually lost his job to a Nebraska transfer. I thought, okay, well, Illinois is not going to score again. I was so wrong. They drove down the second, they opened the second half with two long touchdown drives. So it's always dangerous to overreact to week zero in this case, or week one. We've seen plenty of teams come out, lay an egg in the first game and go on to have a good season and vice versa. The thing is, though, with Nebraska, it's not... We didn't see something new and shocking. We saw all of the same mistakes, and I don't come out of it feeling like, well, if they just correct this, they could still have a good season. I still don't see, you know,
What did you pick them to finish? What was your projected record for them this year?
6-6, which now seems a little optimistic.
Yeah, it seems very optimistic. Let's go through this for a second, just because, like. Again, I thought Illinois was probably a little better than people were giving them credit. I had, you know, like I said, we talked about this before. We did their bowl game a couple years ago. Lovie Smith thought they were going to be much better last year, and then the pandemic hit. But you look at it now. They play Fordham coming up this weekend. That's FCS Fordham. And then Buffalo. And it's not like Buffalo. Buffalo's been good under Lance Leipold the last couple of years. But those are two
home
games.
They better not lose to Buffalo.
They better not lose either game. So let's say they're 2-1 at that point. Then they got to go to Oklahoma. And then all of a sudden it's like, I don't think they're winning at Oklahoma. So let's say they're 2-2. But then you look at the rest of it, and the team that just lost to Illinois, by the way, the team that not only lost to Illinois, but was like down three touchdowns at one point, at Michigan State, home Northwestern, home Michigan, at Minnesota, home Purdue, and then they finish with Ohio State, at Wisconsin, and against Iowa. I mean, 6-6. I mean, looking at this schedule, Stu, it might be really hard for them to win more than four games.
Yeah, well, I would be very surprised if they get to 6-6, but it's not like it's hard to say that without yet knowing what some of these other Big Ten teams are going to look like. For example, Northwestern you know, if you're looking at it optimistically, oh yeah, they'll be better than Nebraska, but they lost almost everybody from that team last season. So who knows?
So let's, all right. So let's,
Michigan is a big mystery.
You're giving, not you, but like, just to get to 6-6, and again, I'm not taking issue.
No, I'm done with 6-6. No, now the ceiling is 5-7.
To get to 5 wins, they're probably going to have to beat Northwestern and Michigan, and we assume Purdue. Because then,
you don't think they could beat Michigan State in the next? That's the next.
I think they could, but that's on the road. Minnesota is on the road. Like, I don't see them winning at Oklahoma. I don't see them beating Ohio State. I don't see them winning in Madison.
It's not a question of if they're going to win those games. It's how embarrassing are they going to be?
Well, never. I mean, hold off on the embarrassing part.
How bad might that Oklahoma score be?
Yeah. Here's the thing with them. Like, so let's go for a second on the big picture part. If I were to think about this, and I'm sure somebody can find something that probably, feels as egregious as this, but after watching this game, I'm like, man, one prediction I got way wrong a couple of years ago was I came away from spending time in Lincoln and being around the team, being around the staff, being in the building, convinced that Scott Frost was going to win big there. And I didn't think necessarily he's going to win national titles, but I think they were going to be a Big Ten title contender. And by now, and not only they're not even close to that, Adrian Martinez, who was very good as a true freshman, has struggled. I mean, like, some of the stuff is definitely not on him. Like, once, if not more than once a game, it feels like a snap goes over his shoulder or something. I don't think they have they do not have top
speed.
End or even
they
close
don't have any
to it
speed.
No, he is their speed. I mean, he busted a 75-yard touchdown run. That he is basically their only big play guy.
Marquise Stepp, the USC transfer running back, had one big play, but they didn't think highly enough of him to even have him be the starting running back. So my thing with Scott Frost is, I think he picked the wrong job. I understand why he wanted to be the come back and save his alma mater, but I mean, that whole season we knew he was going to have a choice at the end of the year, if you remember, between Florida, who fired McElwain in the middle of the season. I don't remember the timing on Mike Riley, but we knew that job was going to come open. I thought he was going to pick Florida. And the reason I thought he was going to pick Florida is because the reason he had success at UCF, the reason he had success at Oregon, frankly, is the ability to recruit these great athletes to be your playmakers. And I mean, Mackenzie Milton was a great quarterback. That started with him. But UCF's offense was so fast. And we know it's hard to recruit those kind of guys to Nebraska. He has recruited some of those guys, and unfortunately, they've transferred. Like, Wando Robinson could be a great playmaker.
They've either transferred, or Maurice Washington, who he recruited in, who showed some flashes, also had big off-field issues, yep, and is no longer in the program. So if you have he and Wando Robinson, you have two playmakers, then I think it might be a different equation. What I thought about, you know, some is the first year when they showed definite some flashes and Martinez looked really good. Martinez had Stanley Morgan, who was one of the better receivers in the Big Ten, if not, you know, in the country, and he'd been really good. And they had J.D. Spielman, who was a really good player. They had two legit, like, Scott Frost can talk about his receiving core being deeper and better than it's been. I don't think it wasn't better than what it was when they first got there. And I think for a variety of reasons, it has not worked. Now, the question, though, is what you're saying. Now, is Florida have a much more upside job than Nebraska? You'd absolutely think so. I mean, look where it's been. Look what the recruiting base is. The question, though, is, and I remember having this conversation with Scott Frost in his office back, I think, I'm trying to think if it was 2017 or 2018. I guess it's 2018. He is basically looked at Wisconsin and said, look, they're not getting, quote unquote, top five recruiting classes. They are, you basically have to do what they do, because it's not like they have this very fertile recruiting area they're in. They have a distinct blueprint for what they're doing. They have an identity. This is the formula. He talked ad nauseum about how Nebraska had gotten away from its formula before, and he was bringing it back, and that's how it had lost its way. Mm-hmm. And it has not worked. I mean, it just, it is not working. Now, look, I'm not saying, it's not like he got fired. So, you know, it, right now, I think it's hard to look at it after the way they started the season and go, okay, I think this is going to turn. I just, you know, again, he's not been fired. We'll see if there is, you know, they could go on and pull off some upsets and get some momentum, and who knows? Maybe they do get to 7 or 8 wins.
I actually do think they have some talent on defense. The pass rush, obviously, in the first half was there. I think they had 3 sacks in the first half. But then in the second half, Illinois came out and just ran the ball down their throat.
So one of the things that's at play, and you can see the frustration in Scott Frost, especially, was what you're talking about in the second half, where when things start to go sour, and this is something that, like, I spent a bunch of time around Alex Grinch when he first got to Oklahoma, the defensive coordinator there, and one of the biggest battles they faced and he faced was when things start to go a little bad, all of a sudden it's like Murphy's Law sets into the mind of, 18, 19, 20 year olds, and mistakes get compounded. What I saw from Nebraska is a team that had a hard time getting out of its own way. You know, Adrian misses an open receiver. You know, that's got to be a touchdown. Look, a bunch of quarterbacks can miss, open receivers. It happens. But it's like, then it's, again, the botched snap. There's a missed assignment. There's, now all of a sudden it's like guys are just their eyes are in the wrong place. Their heads are in the wrong place. You know, when he's talking about, we've seen this movie before, I think the players are seeing it in real time. And I think that only makes it harder. They're in their own heads, it seems like.
For him to come out and say that was pretty telling, because that's basically what all the fans think too. Same movie. So he's hitched his wagon to Adrian Martinez. Usually if a quarterback hasn't progressed at all, at some point he would have been beaten out. He was briefly beaten out by Luke McCaffrey last year. Then Luke McCaffrey had that awful game, and it went right back to Martinez, and now he's gone. So I don't see a lot of great answers there.
Can I read something to you?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. And this is where I think the conversation should go forward. This is from the story I did a couple of years ago when he first got there. Frost's best argument sits almost 500 miles northeast of Lincoln, where defending Big Ten West champ Wisconsin has 5 top 10 finishes in the past 12 years and enters the season as a legit playoff contender. The Badgers' rise, led by Tom Osborne disciple Barry Alvarez, has mirrored the Huskers' decline. And then it goes into a little bit. The Badgers built themselves into relevance without a single recruiting class ranked better than number 30 in the past 17 years. Those rankings are according to 247. And then Frost kind of goes into detail about what Barry Alvarez did. Question is, why do you think the model works in Madison, Wisconsin, and they cannot turn it, or can't seem to turn it, in Lincoln with Scott Frost?
Well, model in Wisconsin has been in place for 30 years. So, and to their credit, they have hired one good coach after another, maybe with the brief exception of Gary Anderson. But it's consistent from year to year over a long period. Nebraska has gone through 2 decades of, let's try Bill Callahan and his West Coast offense.
Oh, well, no, yeah, I know, but I'm just talking about, let's just talk about from Scott Frost getting there.
Oh.
Never mind. I'm just saying, why has Scott Frost been, he talked a lot about Wisconsin and what they were able to do, how it worked, how it could work. He's, I think the hardest thing, and just even what you started to touch on there, is they just cannot turn the corner.
Wisconsin has a clear identity and they recruit to it and it works. What's Scott from Nebraska? What's his identity? I thought it was,
he's trying to bring what it was.
It's
to
not
that
working. And part of that may be what we talked about earlier with some high profile misses in recruiting, or guys that have since transferred, which in itself speaks to there's something going on with the culture there, that these guys want to go play elsewhere. Even it's like Wanda Robinson wasn't some backup looking for playing time. He's their star player and decided he'd be better off at Kentucky. And then,
who, by the way, had been awful on offense for the last few years.
Right. And then again, when you see the same penalties and just self-inflicted wounds, that speaks to bad coaching. It reminds me of USC. No matter how many times Clay Helton turns over that staff, they still are the most penalized team in the country every year, one of the most penalized teams in the country. It just speaks to bad coaching from the top. So he was already on the hot seat. This makes it worse. Real quick, does it change your opinion of Illinois at all and what they might be? I mean, I picked them to go 3-9. So
no, it doesn't change mine because I think I was higher on them than you were. Like, I thought they were like kind of a 6-6 kind of team. That's kind of still what I think they are. Look, I think Brett Bielema was a terrific hire for them. I think this is a good start for him. He did not inherit a bare cupboard because he has a bunch of guys who have played a lot. You know, so many super seniors. I was pleasantly surprised at how well Art Sitkowski played in the second half, but like, he was a guy who had a lot of talent. People were excited about him coming out of high school. It's not like he doesn't have ability. So I don't know. It doesn't change my opinion. I just think it was like, hey, it's a good start for Illinois. But I thought this was so much of a Nebraska thing. I mean, to spin it entirely forward, I mean, are you done with Scott Frost at Nebraska? But like, are you done with Scott Frost in Nebraska?
I feel like I was kind of done with him already. Like, I just, when I picked them to go 6-6, I didn't, once the NCAA investigation hit, no, go back. Once Bill Moose was fired, Bill Moose was his biggest fan. Bill Moose is the one who gave him this outrageous contract extension. Once he was fired, and then you get the NCAA investigation on top of it, you knew he'd have to have a pretty fantastic season this year to save his job. And I didn't see how that was going to be possible. 6-6 was not going to save his job. Can I give you a quick nugget about Art Sitkowski that's going to blow your mind?
Sure.
So doesn't it feel like he's been in college football in the Big Ten forever?
I think a lot of people feel that way because of we're in a pandemic. And
somehow he has, well, I know why, because of the free year. He has 3 seasons of eligibility remaining. He could go on to be Illinois starting quarterback for 3 years. Rutgers starting quarterback for 3 years.
I feel like we need to readjust this process because like it felt like a lot. Like Brady White felt like he was in college forever. Like there's just, you have a lot of guys who you either heard of in the recruiting process, played as true freshmen, bounced around, resurfaced. So I feel like we're not in the same kind of mode that we were in back in 2005.
Well, we have the extra COVID year.
Also think we're just used to guys bouncing around now, resurfacing and playing 5 years. Because some of these, like, it's not like Art Sitkowski is a 6-year senior either.
He's a 4th-year sophomore. He's listed as a sophomore.
Like, I remember my first recollection of him was being in Baton Rouge, and when Matt Canada had just got to LSU as the offense coordinator, there were 2 quarterback prospects he was very intrigued by, Sitkowski and Phil Jurkovic, who ended up now is it on his second school. So, and that feels like a long time ago because obviously Matt Canada's been in the NFL for a little bit now.
All right, so after there was an overlap. UCLA, Hawaii. You have been telling us for months this is going to be the big breakthrough year for the Bruins, Chip Kelly. Well, with the caveat that they were playing Hawaii, they looked pretty darn good.
They did. Now, Hawaii looked awful. They did not look prepared for this game. They were bad on special teams, all sorts of mistakes. The part that I think is something that bears watching with UCLA is they could have a really nasty run game. Their offensive line has a lot of experience, a lot of guys who played. They have really good tight ends, and they will do a lot of funky stuff formationally with those tight ends. And you have 2 running backs who are, one guy is a sledgehammer, Britton Brown. The other guy's even bigger, Zach Charbonnet, with really good feet. And you saw those guys go off in the first half. The part that I think is going to be really fun to see with UCLA is Dorian Thompson-Robinson, who definitely has talent, he was not on. He was like pumped up. He was overshooting some throws. Now, he didn't turn it over. But if he gets on, this offense gets to be a lot more dangerous because they really didn't really show much in the pass game either. And remember, they have Greg Dulcich is as dangerous a tight end as there is in the country. So they have an intriguing mix. I'm excited because I have them this weekend against LSU in the Rose Bowl. Should be a really fun atmosphere. They're going to play an LSU team that people don't have a great read on, and it's going to be fascinating to see because you have two essentially first-time play callers at UCLA. And oh, by the way, bigger issues because they evacuated to Houston, and you have some families who are still, you know, they have families back in Baton Rouge. So it's going to be a challenging week for them on that front. So I think UCLA, and I've made this point in our preseason predictions, I think UCLA is going to be a top 25 team. I don't know if they are good enough on both sides of the ball to be to win the Pac-12, but I definitely could see them winning the Pac-12 South.
Zach Charbonnet looked bigger and stronger than I remembered him at Michigan, and I frankly don't remember him having a lot of moments like he had the other day at Michigan, though I look back now.
He was good as a freshman, though.
Well, he had 149 attempts as a freshman. He averaged 4.9 yards per carry, but he did have, amongst others, a decent game against Alabama in the bowl game that year. Last year, he only had 19 carries, so it's not a secret why he would transfer, but that turned out to be a big pickup for UCLA. And then, you know, UCLA looks like they've got some playmakers on defense as well. So the LSU game, I felt pretty confident LSU will win. I don't know by how much, but obviously, like you said, we've got some awful circumstances, frankly. I hate that this keeps happening to New Orleans in particular. You and I both have spent so much time there for bowl games and national championship games. I was actually watching the Weather Channel yesterday, and the reporter who, you know, wind is blowing and a trash can's blowing down the street on Canal Street, he was reporting from right outside the Sheraton that was the media hotel for the LSU-Clemson national championship game. There's been an assumption all offseason that, you know, like the crowd shots of that UCLA Hawaii game, there was nobody there. But the expectation has been that a whole caravan of LSU fans are going to come and fill up the Rose Bowl this week. And I don't know. I mean, is that going to be possible? Are flights going to be going out of Louisiana anytime soon? Out of those, I don't know. More important things than whether people can get to the UCLA game. I just hope everybody's all right. But certainly that is affecting that game. It's also affecting Tulane was going to host Oklahoma this weekend. A rare moment, right, for that program or frankly any program of that level to be hosting a team like Oklahoma. That's now, I mean, reportedly it's moving to Norman, but that isn't official yet. So I feel like every college football season, a hurricane or more than one hurricane affects early season. This one's particularly bad.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
On Saturday morning, we've got all these QB announcements coming out, and one we've been waiting for a while, Texas, comes down. Hudson Card wins the job, which maybe on the outside seems surprising. I guess not on the inside. You've done a lot of reporting on that. They're playing one of the better games this week against Louisiana. What should we expect from the guy who was good enough to beat out Casey Thompson, who had that huge bowl performance against Colorado?
Yeah, Stu, if you talk to coaches inside the UT program, they're not at all surprised it played out this way. The people I've talked to there have been really gushing about Hudson Card's skill set. They said he is extremely accurate. He's a really, really good athlete. And they say he reminds them in a lot of ways in his game of Aaron Rodgers. They feel like he is going to be really special in the not too distant future. You couple that with Bijan Robinson, their outstanding running back. They feel like they have some really key building pieces. And as somebody put it to me on Saturday morning, so basically he is our future, but they said he really is our present too. And it's going to be interesting because Steve Sarkisian has a terrific track record with quarterbacks. We saw what he did at Alabama with Mac Jones. This guy is a different kind of athlete, but you know, two quarterbacks that I'm fascinated to see, and we have not seen them in person play, but they're both going to be key figures for different reasons, and they're both in the same quarterback class. Hudson Card was ranked a little higher by the recruiting analysts than Haynes King, the Texas A&M quarterback. Both guys are really dynamic athletes, very talented. And I think we're going to hear a lot about them starting this weekend. And like you said, Louisiana is a really good team. Patrick Toney has a really good defense there. They have everybody back. This is a fascinating matchup in week one. And we'll see if Hudson Card's ready to hit the ground running. Steve Sarkisian apparently thinks he will.
You wrote a pretty interesting story. First of all, back in the offseason, talking to guys who are on the previous staff about what exactly does Steve Sarkisian have to work with there. And then you wrote a story on Saturday about kind of what went into this decision, which gives me a natural opportunity to tell people that if you haven't subscribed to The Athletic already, this is your time. We have a 50% off promo going right now. If you go to theathletic.com/theaudible, you can get an annual subscription to The Athletic for just $2.99 a month. That is an insane value. If you go just on the college football section alone, you're getting way more than your $2.99 a month's worth, and that's just college football. Obviously, we have every sport covered at The Athletic with lots of great experts. So I would hop on theathletic.com/theaudible and take advantage of that. Another notable quarterback decision announced on Monday, Joe Milton, another Michigan transfer, won the Tennessee job. A little bit of a surprise just because he got there later than Hendon Hooker, who was a former starter at Virginia Tech, who Jeremy Pruitt brought in. Milton didn't show up until the spring. Milton last year had that great debut against Minnesota and then just seemed to regress week after week after week. So I'm curious to, while I don't have very high expectations for Tennessee, they're playing Bowling Green on Thursday night. The one thing we do know about Josh Heupel is he usually has his quarterbacks ready to go. They usually put up big stats. We'll see if this can be a little bit of a comeback story for Joe Milton.
He definitely has a huge arm. He's athletic. I think he wasn't very accurate last year, and I think ultimately that was a big part of his undoing. I mean, for his big arm, they struggle to make a lot of plays downfield. We'll see what he can do. You know, it's weird. You watch Tennessee is not – Tennessee's had some good players there over the last few years. You see what they do in the NFL, and it just hasn't worked in Knoxville. We'll see if Josh Heupel can, you know, he's always been known when he was at UCF as having really prolific offenses. Now he's got a much steeper hill to climb, but you're right. I want to keep an eye on it. One other thing from Saturday, Stu, that jumped out at me, but I watched and I was like, this is a team I think we should keep more of an eye on from the group of five level. It's Fresno State. I know UConn is not in a good place right now. They've been really bad, and it was their first game in like 2 years. Fresno State's going to have a really good offense. I said that the other day. You ready to get on the bandwagon with me for the Bulldogs?
I mean, I feel like they never left. They had such success under Jeff Tedford. I don't read much into a COVID, anybody in COVID last year, so it wouldn't surprise me if they're right back to being a Mountain West contender. But Bruce, they're going to have to deal with the mighty Spartans of San Jose State, who I watched just run. It looked like Nick Starkel was like throwing routes on air the way he was picking apart Southern Utah the other night.
Well, when you said we're going to have to deal with the Mighty, I thought you were talking about who they're playing this weekend.
They are playing, that's true, they are playing the Mighty Ducks of Oregon this weekend. Are you saying...
No, they are legit Mighty.
Yeah, are you saying you're giving Fresno a shot to pull the upset there in Eugene?
A shot? Yeah, I actually am giving them a shot. I think they will keep it interesting for a while because... Remember, so much has been talked about who Oregon's playing next week. They got to go to Ohio State. Tricky spot for the Ducks here because this is a really good team. Jake Haener played at Washington. He can sling the football around. Ronnie Rivers is one of the best running backs on the West Coast. They have a couple of receivers who could, one of them did play, Ty Jones play in the Pac-12, but they have guys who definitely could play there. And Kalen DeBoer is, I think we're going to find out, Kalen DeBoer is one of the best kept secrets in college football coaching. So tough spot for the Ducks. I think Oregon will win, but I think this game could be a headache for the Ducks for a while.
I mean, it's your classic, are they going to look ahead to Ohio State kind of game?
They better not, yeah. Or else... The Pac-12 is going to have is going to have some remorse from a Mountain West team that is like they played a game. They, you know, I don't know. I think they're going to have a big chip on their shoulder. This is a.
By the way, poor UConn had 2 years to prepare for that game. They didn't play last season. They've done nothing but practice for 2 years for that game, and they still got shut out.
Yeah, you also go cross country. It's like 1,000 degrees. My buddy Lindsey Rhodes was on the sideline of that game, melting away. So, you know, not ideal for Randy Edsall. And I also they did not have a bunch of. They were like their D line room was already really thin to go into that game. It was kind of a recipe for disaster.
We're gonna get into a couple of the Week One games here in a second, but there's one really strange story from Sunday that we've got to talk about. And it's a high school football story, but it's one of these stories that kind of transcends and gets the interest going. Anyway, here's what happened. So if you haven't been following this, you know, ESPN shows a lot of high school games, especially early in the season. And on Sunday they had a game with that. And I'm to be clear, I didn't watch this game. So I don't want to claim that I was watching this in real time, but IMG Academy, the powerhouse in Florida. They're often on these ESPN games, it feels like. And they're playing a school called Bishop Sycamore, which caught my eye because I went to Sycamore High School in Cincinnati from Columbus, Ohio.
I didn't know you went to a private school that was...
I didn't. Sycamore High School is a public school. Bishop Sycamore is... I don't even know what to describe. We're not even clear if it is a school.
We're not even sure if there was a Bishop Sycamore, according to like
the Ringer. Not a real person, I know that.
The Ringer is like, there's a Bishop Sankey, but there's a Bishop Sycamore.
So it's 58-0 IMG Academy, and as the game is going, even the ESPN commentators, basically it turns out that they got scammed. There's like a sub company that makes these matchups for ESPN, and somehow they got duped into thinking that Bishop Sycamore has a bunch of D1 prospects on their team. They clearly don't. And making matters even worse, somehow
Bishop Sankey fielded his own team.
Bishop Sycamore played a game on Friday night against a high school in Pittsburgh and then turned around and played this game on Sunday, which is just insane. And
it's fine if it's a basketball school because you can see you can play two basketball games in 3 days.
You can't do that. And so here, I'm just going to read you real quick what the ESPN guys were saying on the air, which is, you know, the fact that they're willing to kind of blast them on the air was pretty telling. Bishop Sycamore told us they had a number of Division I prospects on the roster, but to be frank, a lot of that we could not verify. They did not show up in our database. They did not show up in the databases of other recruiting services. So, okay, that's what you're telling us. Fine. That's how we take it in. From what we've seen so far, this is not a fair fight. And there's got to be a point where you're worried about health and safety, to which Tom Luganville, the analyst, says, I'm already worried about it. I think this could potentially be dangerous given the circumstances and the mismatch we have here. And quite honestly, Bishop Sycamore doesn't have not only the frontline players, they don't have the depth in case something were to happen to their roster with a kid or two here throughout the remaining two quarters of this football game. They have 30 players. Many of them play both ways. They played two games in 3 nights. They went 0-6 last year. And if you look up the address of this supposed school, it takes you to an office park somewhere in Columbus. This is mind-numbing that, you know, I get it. There's another company that makes these mashups for ESPN, but how on earth did this get on their air? And I guess my question would be, if they're that worried about safety, like once they realized that this was a scam, why did they not shut the game down?
Those are very valid questions. I think at what point do you realize, oh crap, this is a potential disaster waiting to happen? Now, there are a couple of guys. I talked to some recruiting coordinators around the country. Like the quarterback who plays for this program, he is somebody who is a Division I prospect. Now, I think you have a couple of guys who might be 20 years old who are in this game. Like,
there's that part of it too.
There's a bunch of layers to this. Not to go too far down this rabbit hole, but I think there's probably going to be like 8 different compelling stories that are going to get written about this over the next week or two.
This school is not part of the Ohio High School Association, so there's no oversight. The coach of the team also runs the school. I mean, every couple of years, I feel we hear about like one of these diploma mills, and I don't even know if this is that. And it's just so infuriating that there are these people who take advantage of high school kids and their parents to make a buck and to sell it under the auspices of that they're, you know, changing people's lives and preparing them for college. No, they are not preparing anybody for college. We saw one of the parents of a player that used to be on the team DMing the ESPN people to say, I want to talk about, you know, how that thing needs to be shut down. Our son, all these, you know, things that happen to them. So I assume that this will continue to be a story and that we will continue to peel the layers away. And I do hope it gets shut down. I mean, I don't know who has the authority to do that, but you know, these kids are being completely taken advantage of.
This reminded me a lot. A long time ago, I did a story for ESPN Magazine about a school that sprung up out of nowhere and was basically just a basketball school with a basketball team. Now that program actually had some big time talent, but it was just, you know, one room, you know, kind of out of nothingness. It grew out of Mount Zion Academy, which was the school that Tracy McGrady came from. And this was around when Amari Stoudemire was being there. It was just kind of surreal. That was an interesting story to kind of work on. And you would see more of that in what at the time was the fringe of college basketball recruiting. And then it became a lot more commonplace in the high school basketball circles. And a lot of them, honestly, had sprung up as it relates to TV matchups that ESPN was putting on their air. Now, as it relates to football, I mean, again, this is, like, I think a lot of people are very intrigued by this story for like all sorts of reasons. And we are at the tip of the iceberg with this, which I imagine is going to see a lot of layers of it coming out in the next week or two.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
All right, so back to college. First of all, we should have mentioned this sooner. This is the magical time of year, Bruce. Not only is college football back, but the Audible goes back to 2 episodes a week. And so because of that, the second one that we'll do later in the week is when we'll do the mailbag. Maybe we'll do some picks. Who knows what kind of fun we'll have. But this week one this year starts even earlier than usual. It starts on Wednesday night. Let's talk about a couple of these early games. And I know because you do the Freaks List and you talk to everybody, you're going to have some really unique insight to give us on Wednesday night's big matchup between UAB and Jacksonville State.
I don't got a ton for you, Stu, on UAB Jacksonville State, so I'm not going to lie. Do you really?
Well, I'll say this. Yes. Every year I put Bill Clark, the UAB coach, in my top 15 or so of the best coaches in the country. And every year you mock me for it.
I don't mock you. I think he's done a really good job. I think they've been really good on defense on that side of the ball, especially. They've done a really good job, but I don't know. I think, you know, you put him above a lot of coaches who are also, I think, have done really good jobs. So
just a reminder, UAB shut down its football program at the end of the 2014 season. And there was no indication, at least first, that they were ever going to reopen it. Then they announced they were. Bill Clark stayed at UAB, spent 2 years building a roster back from scratch. They start play again in 2017, thinking they're going to go, I don't know, winless, 2-10, something like that. Nope. 8-5, second place in their division. The next year, first place in their division and win the conference championship. So the last 4 years, 8-5, 11-3, 9-5, and last year, 6-3, and won their division. That's not great coaching. I don't know what is.
That's really good. That is a terrific job. As I said, I didn't disagree. Jacksonville State quarterback that some of you will remember, Zarek Cooper. The reason why I kind of am connected to him a little bit is feels like forever ago. Zarek Cooper was, remember when I was did this stuff on virtual reality and quarterback coaching, especially. Zarek Cooper was one of the first quarterbacks in college football who I think really was steeped in it, because Clemson was one of the first programs. It grew out of Stanford, and that business at the time, Striver, which is still in business, Clemson was one of the first ones to buy in. And Zarek Cooper, who was redshirting at that point, really did it. Was all in on it, and he ended up, obviously there's been a lot of big time quarterbacks who've come in and out of Clemson. Zarek Cooper's been at Jacksonville State. He's a guy who's on NFL scouts radar, so he'll be not an easy guy to open up against for UAB, but I imagine your Blazers, Stu.
I'm taking the Blazers. Up to it.
Okay.
I don't even know what the spread is, but I'm taking the Blazers.
Do you own any UAB gear, Stu?
No, but I probably should. I wonder if home field has done a UAB set yet. I'll have to check that out. Thursday night, I remember when this matchup was originally announced a few years ago and everybody was very excited. Boise State at UCF. What we couldn't have known at the time is that both of these programs would have new coaches making their debut. Andy Avalos for Boise State and, of course, Gus Malzahn at UCF. I'm most curious to see what a Gus Malzahn UCF team looks like.
Yeah, you'd hope. Dylan Gabriel's really good, and
yep,
he can throw it around. Let's see how much Gus lets him throw it around or wants him to throw it around. And look, Andy Avalos has Hank Bachmeier. He's a good quarterback. They had I don't know. This is a really good game. It's a good game for the tricky part for me, if you're Boise State, is you got to go to Orlando where it's going to be like 1,000 degrees and you're going to face a team that's fast. And I'm sure Gus is going to be running it quick. Very interested to see how this one plays out.
If you recall, UCF a few years ago went down and beat Florida State. And that was in the day. That was, you know, peak Florida humidity. At least this one's 7 p.m. kickoff. Bunch of guys have followed Gus from Auburn to UCF, including Big Cat Bryant, who was know, he was a legit, pretty good defensive lineman for Auburn in the SEC. So interested to see that. The main event, I think you would agree, Ohio State at Minnesota, 8 p.m. on Fox. I believe your friends at the Big Noon Kickoff are headed to that one.
They will be. They are going to be in the Midwest. I will be back in L.A. for the studio, but they will be there for that. That is a big game. Obviously, Minnesota had a really good 2019 and a really suspect 2020. They feel like, I've talked to some of the staff there, they feel like they've gotten a lot better in their run game on defense. They feel like they're much better on the D-line and in the front seven. It's going to be a challenge because Ohio State has three really good running backs, great receivers, and a really big offensive line. So I think everybody is got high expectations for CJ Stroud. What I want to ask you, Stu, though, is we both, I think, have Ohio State. I assume you do, too, as a playoff team.
I do.
Okay. Last year, they were not good on defense, certainly by Ohio State standards. They lost a bunch of linebackers who played a lot of football. How much confidence do you have in Ohio State having a defense the caliber that can win a national title?
Not much. I'll be honest. I originally thought I would leave Ohio State out of my playoff predictions just because of exactly what you just said. Also a little bit of uncertainty at running back, although it's starting to seem like that they'll be fine just because they have three or four guys they can count on. I just don't know that anybody in the Big Ten can, you know, maybe if Oregon wins at Ohio State, then they would possibly lose another game somewhere in the Big Ten and be 11-2. But I just don't see anybody that's really on their level this season. It's not like a couple years ago where Penn State was a legit threat or Michigan before that. So I just kind of think they will do their usual 12-1 by default. But there's no question that their pass defense was actually pretty bad last season. And granted, it wasn't, I mean, it's more like a half season. So you know, the talent's there. In fact, the secondary is usually the one position you can count. They always have cornerbacks. I know Seven Banks is getting hyped up a little bit. So I expect they'll be better. How much better? I'm not sure. Minnesota, if Minnesota is going to win this game, it's going to be from the running game, you would think.
Yeah, big offensive line. Mo Ibrahim is a really good running back. There's a bunch of really good running backs in this game. What we need to see is Tanner Morgan was really good, most improved quarterback maybe in the country, not named Joe Burrow in 2019. And now they don't have those receivers that they used to have, Tyler Johnson and Bateman. But I don't know. Like, pressure, I think, an interesting spot for Mike Sanford Jr. That's the offensive coordinator. Kirk Ciarrocca did a really good job as the OC at Minnesota. I know you're pretty high on Minnesota. You had them as an 8 or 9 win team, right? Have them as.
Yeah, I have them going 8-4. I do think their defense will be better.
It was really bad last year. It's got it.
I think Tanner Morgan had some extenuating circumstances last year. His dad was battling cancer. He has unfortunately since succumbed to cancer. That maybe contributed to him having a rough season. But I was just looking this back up. Do you remember a few years ago, Ohio State, it was kind of similar. Ohio State opened on a Thursday night at Indiana.
I do remember that.
I remembered it being closer than it was. Basically, Indiana led.
It was very close. It was very
for
close
a while.
For three quarters, yeah.
Indiana led 21-20 with 4:56 left in the third quarter. So
yeah, that's very close. Yeah.
At that time, it was a scare. But Ohio State ended up winning 49-21. And this game is notable because it was J.K. Dobbins' first game at Ohio State as a true freshman, and he ran for 181 yards. So sign of things to come. Unfortunately, he suffered his season-ending injury. He's now with the Ravens and suffered a season-ending injury in the last preseason.
Do you think Travion Henderson has a J.K. Dobbins-like breakout?
I'm not sure because I'm not sure yet what the distribution of carries is going to be there. I think the difference is that was J.T. Barrett back for his, I believe that was his senior year.
It would not surprise me if that happened. I wouldn't be surprised if he did like a 9-carry, 161-yard game.
Okay.
So
I believe it, but I also feel like Don't you think there's a better chance that Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson and Marvin Harrison Jr. and so on are going to shred their secondary?
I think both could happen.
So in other words, we just,
I think it could be like a 45. I think it could be a 45-24 kind of game.
Yeah, that would make sense. Which reminds me, I got to do my picks against the spread in a couple of days for the first time of the 2021 season. We'll save the game of the week in college football, Michigan State Northwestern, on Friday night for next time. And again, we'll do your questions in the next episode. That's the audiblepod@gmail.com. We'll see you next time.